Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Chuck Morse here, hosting the program. My guest is Leo Homan. He's the author of Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. Leo, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Chuck.
You're welcome. And I also follow your column at World Net Daily, and I admire your work. This book couldn't be more timely, and I want you to comment before we get into the content with regard to President Trump's directive to shut down refugees from Syria and also five other countries over the weekend, and what that portends.
Yeah, absolutely. We have the left in this country absolutely freaking out over this executive order, Chuck, to just, and all it does is temporarily halt visas and refugees from seven countries. It is not a Muslim ban, quote unquote Muslim ban, which they're all calling it, because the largest and most, some of the worst Muslim countries are not even on this list of seven countries where we're going to temporarily halt the influx from until we can figure out how to screen them better. For example, Saudi Arabia is not on the list. Pakistan is not on the list. None of the Gulf states are on the list. The world's largest Muslim country, Indonesia, is not on the list. Yet they're calling it a Muslim ban, okay? And point number two, what he's doing is no different than what President Obama did in 2011 when we found at least two Iraqi refugees had slipped into the country and committed and were known terrorists. They were living in Bowling Green, Kentucky. ABC News did a big story on it at the time. And President Obama halted refugee resettlement from Iraq for 6 months until he could figure out how to what was going on that allowed these terrorists to slip into the refugee ranks from Iraq. President George W. Bush severely restricted refugee resettlement in the wake of 9/11. And you never heard a peep out of these leftist Marxist professors, lawyers, media pundits that are all freaking out right now about President Trump's actions. So it's really exposing these leftists as duplicitous, hypocritical, and just blatant propagandists.
Well, I think it's safe to say that the left is recognizes Donald Trump for who he is, which is a potential revolutionary figure in terms of undoing the whole rotten edifice that they've been building up for at least the last half a century. So they're going to find any excuse to get out and, you know, rile people up. Plus, you get George Soros in there financing
absolutely
the rallies and whatnot. But I want to ask, get to a more fundamental issue, which is the whether or not part of the bill is to suspend refugee status or refugees. And we should note that people who were interrupted, who were coming to this country for legitimate reasons, like they were professors or scientists or doctors, that while it was inconvenient for them and it was not pleasant, they were able to receive waivers, and that someone of that nature can go to the U.S. Embassy and get a waiver, get investigated, and get permission. So this is not a ban on it goes to your point that this is not a ban on Muslims. This is a ban on people who may be engaging in jihad. And my question to the left is twofold. First of all, do they recognize the existence of jihad, which a lot of them probably don't? And if they do, what exactly is their solution with regard to protecting American citizens from this terror war? But to get to a more fundamental question, and I think this is something that you delve into in your book, Stealth Invasion, you talk about a Muslim conquest of America through immigration and resettlement, I think that there is certainly evidence that this is going on in Europe. And you cite sources that would indicate that the Muslim Brotherhood's various American apparatuses, such as CARE and ISNA and other groups, are deliberately engaging in this policy. Can you talk a little bit about that, and also, even more troubling, why it is that American leaders, including President Obama and even possibly President Bush, were aiding and abetting this effort?
Yeah, that's a lot in that one question. But basically, Chuck, if you look at the Muslim Brotherhood and inspect its own documents that have been seized by, some of these documents have been seized by the FBI and presented as evidence in a very key trial. It was called the Holy Land Foundation trial in 2007. In these documents, one of which is called the Explanatory Memorandum for the Brothers in North America, it laid out a strategy. And it was published in 1991, seized by the FBI in 2004, and presented as evidence, as I said, in 2007. And in this document, the Brotherhood is speaking to the ICWAM, which is the Brothers in North America, and it very, very plainly states that their work in America is a form of grand jihad, in which they would work with the with sympathetic organizations on the left to sabotage the American system and bring it down from within. And that's almost a word-for-word quote. I'm going from memory, but it's that that's a paraphrase that's pretty close to word-for-word. And so we know this, and it's no secret. In various FBI and directors such as Robert Mueller and others have testified in before Congress saying that the Muslim Brotherhood is a terrorist organization, that it is working to its goal, its own stated goal, is to spread Sharia law around the globe. And it's in its motto, it says that it's for jihad, and jihad is our way. That's the highest way. And so, you know, none of this is a secret. None of it is a conspiracy, because it's all out there in the open in these documents. Don't take my word for it. You know, people could read these documents for themselves if they wanted to. And, you know, I mean, here it is, the credo of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Quran is our constitution, jihad is our way, and death for the glory of Allah is our greatest ambition, quote unquote. So, you know, it's in their motto, it's in their founding documents, it's in their strategy documents. And how do they do this? They call it civilization jihad, which is different from violent jihad. And basically what you do is you take advantage of a country like America's liberal immigration laws. People come in, they wrap themselves in the civil rights banner and all of the rights that Americans have, but they're coming in from a Sharia-compliant nation, and they'll scream till they're blue in their face about their rights, and groups like CARE, which is affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood, will back them and file lawsuits on their behalf. All the while, you know, they're building their ranks and trying to establish a, quote, settlement, which is what Muslim Brotherhood calls it. Sounds a lot similar to resettlement, doesn't it? Refugee,
yes.
Resettlement. In this same document I quoted earlier, the Brotherhood talks about building settlements in North America and establishing Islam as a force to be reckoned with in this country. And they've been very successful. You know, we now have 3.3 million Muslims in America, and, you know, compare that to just 25, 30 years ago, and it's grown almost threefold. So it's been happening since the 1960s. That's when the Brotherhood started in America, started building up its base. It started with the working on college campuses through the Muslim Student Association, And now we have an MSA chapter in almost every single college in this country. We have CARE, which is very active, filing lawsuits on behalf of Muslims wherever it can. We have them in our own government, Justice Department, Homeland Security, State Department. Justice Department has been filing lawsuits against communities that deny mosques, even though they've been building mosques right in the backyard of residential neighborhoods. But you can't deny one, not under President Obama. If a community denies a mosque, mm-hmm. you've got the U.S. Justice Department right there ready to file a lawsuit and claim you're discriminating based on anti-Muslim attitudes in your community.
Right.
So this is the situation.
Yeah, okay, my guess is Leo Holman, stealth invasion, Muslim conquest through immigration and resettlement jihad. Leo, you know, I don't want to paint with too broad a brush here because I think that probably a good percentage of Muslims who are American and have been here for a while or who are immigrating are not interested in civilizational jihad. Maybe the problem is more the institutional element of American Islam, which is connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, and why it is that our government and our institutions have given them, the more radical element, a more formal voice and not some of the more Americanized, modernized, more moderate elements. I mean, for example,
absolutely.
I mean
there are
hear
some moderate
NPR,
Muslims. Yeah.
Of course. And whenever you hear NPR do a story about anything to do with Islam, they're quoting from CARE. Now, CARE, again, as you say, is connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. Even liberal Senator Charles Schumer and Barbara Boxer have said so on the floor of the Senate. This isn't even a partisan question, that CARE is a branch of Hamas. Now, the problem, therefore, is that the Islamic leadership in America, the radical Islam, is the more radical because we've given them a voice. But I want to ask you a more fundamental question here, which is that people who are protesting and people who are out there, left-wingers, who I think are largely what Lenin used to call useful idiots, I don't think they're conscious, they're suggesting that there's something progressive or something virtuous about welcoming into this country hundreds of thousands, if not, I suppose, billions of Muslims. Now, I feel like almost squeamish when I say that no, I don't think that we should absorb large numbers of Muslims. We should certainly welcome into the country Muslim individuals who are scientists, are doctors, are people who want to come here and do good, or on a case-by-case, or also of Muslims who are friends of America and have supported us in Iraq and other countries. But I see nothing to gain by swinging open the doors and letting hundreds of thousands of people who have embraced not so much a religion but an ideological and political ideal that is not very favorably disposed toward women, does not have a good view on gays, does not certainly have a good view on Jews, and that frankly doesn't have a particularly positive feeling about constitutional government. What say you?
I could not agree more. I mean, you have to ask yourself, what is the end game here? I mean, if we continue to bring these people in, and like you said, it's not just the fact that they may be Muslim. Are you a Sharia-compliant Muslim? Do you believe that people should have do you believe it should be legal for people to draw an image of Muhammad, or should they be punished somehow? Do you believe that women have the same rights as men? And I'm talking about everything from, you know, sexual mores to inheritance rights. Do you believe in the blasphemy laws? You know, do you believe in the caliphate? These are the type of things that matter, not whether you're Muslim. And so, you know, and I don't care if you're, you know, a PhD or a doctor or a Somali refugee with no skills. If you believe in those tenets of Sharia law, you are not going to make a good American citizen. It's as simple as that. Because you don't believe in the Bill of Rights. You don't believe in freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of religion, and equal treatment of women and gays, like you said. So
you feel that it's legal and appropriate to commit murder, like honor killings of girls. You know, this is something that, you know, people are equating, for example, Sharia law with, you know, Jewish law, with Catholic law. Not so.
Right.
First of all, Christian and Jewish religious law, you know, it's not in any way as extreme. It doesn't call for anyone to be murdered. It doesn't call for anyone to be, you know, beheaded or lashed.
Denigrated.
You know, doesn't give a man the right to beat his wife. You know, there's nothing like that in those laws. But even more significantly, Sharia law does not just apply to Muslims. It applies to the entire world. So if you live in a country that has Sharia law, you and you're not Muslim, you are still subject to Sharia law. Now, in Jewish law and Catholic law, it only applies to Jews and Catholics, and that's a voluntary thing. I mean, you don't have to be in that religion. Whereas with Islam, you have to. If you're a Muslim and you leave the religion, you could be killed. You know, you're not allowed to do that, and it applies. You know, this is a. You know, it's a political and military. Yeah, it's a military and political system that is very similar to communism and Nazism, in my opinion.
So why can't we get liberals to understand this, Chuck? That's the question. You know, because it flies in the face of their own values. You know, feminism and pro-gay rights and all this stuff. You know, so why, in their view, how does it behoove liberalism? How does it advance liberalism to bring in large numbers of Sharia-compliant Muslims? And let's say, okay, that we're bringing in my book gives a lot of the numbers, by the way. We're bringing in about 260,000 from Muslim countries per year. Now, let's just say that by the most conservative estimates, you know, 25 to 35, 40% of these people believe in Sharia law. So they end up becoming citizens. They have large families. You know, American women have a fertility rate of 1.9 children per woman. You know, that's not even replacement. That's not even a replacement figure, mm-hmm. You know. Whereas these families coming from these Islamic lands have 5, 6, 7, 8 children per woman. And so if we think long term, and you're a liberal, I'm just trying to think like a liberal, you know, I'm for Jewish people's rights, I'm for women's rights, I'm for gay rights. How does bringing in that number of people, which we know do not practice family planning or abortion like Americans tend to, how does that advance liberalism? At some point, you're going to end up, they're going to end up electing leaders that reflect their values and people, you know, and putting people in government who are against Jewish rights, against Israel, against gay rights, against women's rights. I don't understand the mindset.
Well, you know, by the way, I looked into a little bit the issue of Islam and abortion, and they're more pro-abortion than Roe versus Wade. But putting that aside,
I think they believe that up to like 24 weeks or something, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's up to up to 9 months, I think, but or 6 months. I don't have the exact figure.
24 weeks, I believe. Yeah, and they believe that is the point at which the spirit or something, the human spirit, enters the fetus. I don't know the details of it, but I believe it's 24 weeks. Yep.
Okay, but you ask, you know, you bring up the question: why is it that the left is aligning with Islam? I mean, to the point where you have.
I mean, I have a theory on it myself, but I'd like to get your opinion.
Thank you. I mean, leftists are protesting at the airports over the weekend, saying Allah Akbar. So, I mean, my theory is that, you know, they're making common cause with Islam because they share certain similarities ideologically. The first one being that Sharia law is very much like the leftist nanny state, the total state which controls all aspects of the life of the citizen. That's what Sharia law is. It controls everything from cradle to grave. Secondly, the left resonates with the concept of jihad. They call it revolution. You know, they want to have world control under Sharia. They, you know, the left wants world control under a dictatorship of the proletariat. Now, I'm not saying here that leftists are conscious of this, but these are ideas that have been embraced and imbibed over probably the better part of the last century. And there is something about the idea of a world order coming out of Islam with Sharia controlling every person that mirrors what they believe in, even if it's not the same at all in terms of the outward expression of it. You know, it has a different cosmetic look to it. It might have different priorities. But there's enough common ground there that they make common cause. And of course, the other thing is that it's they have common enemies. Their enemies are
That's my theory right there. Yeah.
Israel, Christianity, individual rights, capitalism, free trade, you know, all, you know, national sovereignty, all of the things that we in the West have developed very carefully over many, many centuries. What do you think?
You just hit on my theory there about the common enemies, and I speak about that at length in the book. You know, we heard, you know, the left has always been working for a world without borders. John Kerry last year, for instance, just one example, spoke, Secretary of State, former Secretary of State John Kerry spoke at the graduation ceremonies of Northeastern University and told the students there to, quote, prepare for a world without borders. And that this was a good thing that would help the world and bring prosperity and freedom to the world. Now, Islam also believes in a global caliphate. You know, certain aspects of Islam, the Muslim Brotherhood aspect of Islam, definitely believes in a global caliphate with no allegiance to any national borders. Your allegiance would be to Islam and Allah. So there you have that. And, you know, everything that Western civilization has traditionally stood for, going back hundreds of years with Christendom, you know, goes against these beliefs. We believe in that, you know, nations were created by God. We believe that family values are important, which the leftists don't. You know, we believe in a lot of things. Like you said, there's a lot of common ground. You have this respect for life in Western civilization, which we don't see in the Marxist-Leninist leftist worldview, and it also is not there in Islam. We just talked about abortion. And we know how they sacrifice their children for jihad. I guess there's a lot of common ground there, and they see Judaism and Christianity as standing in the way of these values that they hold. And so you have the left in this country using Islam as a sort of battering ram against Western civilization.
That's right. I mean, they may not share the exact same goals, but they form a common union, maybe in the same way that Stalin formed a union with Hitler. You know, Nazism and communism, both leftist social experiments, maybe they eventually went to war with each other, but they found more in common when they needed to because they shared enough of a worldview. And, our worldview is that rights and sovereignty comes from God, not from the state.
Right.
And even though Islam, I think there is more hope for Islam than communism because they actually do believe in God. They're not complete atheists. Nevertheless, they view rights as coming from the caliphate, just like, the socialists view it as coming from an enlightened elite that knows better than the rest of us how to live. So you know, they are resonating, and as a result, Leo, you draw a very, very solid thesis in your book illustrating how American liberals, many of them well-meaning and perhaps unconscious, but nevertheless, many of them quite conscious, have formed this have formed an alliance with this agenda to help hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Muslims come into the United States to engage in civilizational jihad, just as they've done in Europe. And we can take a look at Europe and how things have fared there, and it's not a very good picture.
No, it really isn't. You know, we've had, and I've maintained in the book, too, that a strong Christianity is probably the best defense against all of this civilization jihad and all of this immigration. You know, what we see in Europe as the example, you know, after World War II, Europe very quickly descended into a post-Christian society. People gave up their faith. Churches were turned into museums and just sort of empty tombs of a former Christian society. Well, now we see many of those empty tombs being resurrected and converted into mosques. We see growing intolerance of Christianity and Judaism. We see a lot of attacks in France and Netherlands and Belgium, UK, a lot of attacks against Jews there and Jewish properties. Jews have had to move out of a lot of areas in France. It's just gotten so bad. And so this is all
not,
because our,
it's not
originally
too late.
Christianity,
it's not
Christians walked away from their faith.
And it's not too late. We've seen a resurrection in Great Britain with the Brexit, which is all about preserving British culture. We've seen the election of President Donald J. Trump here in the United States, who has put America first and who has promised to make America great again. Now you see other movements in Europe, and of course the left is trying to demonize these movements by claiming they're fascist. That couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, they're not that far left. You know, first of all, I mean, they're much more interested in restoring, you know, the basis of sovereign nationhood that have made all of these nations great. So we can be hopeful over that, and I think this nation really dodged a bullet by electing Trump, and I hope that that's a movement that spreads around the world. We need to educate people with regard to why that election is important and why this work is important. And, you know, that's sort of what your book does, and that's what I'm trying to do. Leo, we've reached toward the end of the program, so can you mention to my listeners where exactly they can get your book and read your articles?
Sure, Chuck. The book is available on Amazon, Stealth Invasion. It's also available at the WND Superstore. World Net Daily has a superstore where it sells books under its WND Books publishing imprint, and that website is superstore.wnd.com. And you could also follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Leo Homan. I post all my articles there, and I would love to have your listeners keep track of my articles. I just had a really important one go up last night about this whole Donald Trump phenomenon and how it's going to have conflict and confrontation with the Muslim world and what to look for going forward.
All right, Leo, thank you so much, and we'll do it again. I'd like to maybe bring you back to discuss your articles as we go forward. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you so much
Leo
for
Homan,
having me on, Chuck.
My pleasure. Leo Homan, again, is the author of Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad. I want to thank everyone for listening this afternoon. Of course, my books are available at Amazon as well. Just put my name in the server, Chuck Morse, like Morse code, M-O-R-S-E, and you shall see them all come up. Thanks for listening, everyone, and have a good day.